Welcome to Season 5 of Kin Folklore, where we have gone through a portal and returned to the world of His Dark Materials for Season 2 of the BBC HBO series based on the novels written by Philip Pullman. Last week, we discussed the sacrifices made to obtain knowledge and truth and the lore around that beautiful, subtle knife.
In this episode, we'll be covering all the demon-changing and world-exploring action of Season 2, Episode 5, entitled The Scholar. We'll recap the episode, talk a bit about our observations, and discuss some of the themes, and then we'll look through the inverse spyglass for some background.
Listen, kinfolk. Kin Folklore is not out here trying to stay in the room with you like a creepy Wyclef Jean listening to the miseducation of Lauryn Hill for the first time while you change into something less conspicuous. But we have adult content for you, okay? Along with twice as many shopping arcades, half as many places of worship, and a complete culture of consumerism. Ah, the joys of our world in Will's Oxford. Let's get into it.
So we're going to start off with talking about Mrs. Coulter and Boreal. Coulter and Boreal arrive in his estate in Oxford, where he shows her that he has amassed a small fortune selling trinkets from their world.
She's not impressed. Yeah. She's not fucking impressed. No. All right?
I'm not impressed. So he's basically like scavenging his world for little things and then selling them to people in Will's world for a fortune.
Yeah.
He's kept the alethiometer in a vault and his house is fully monitored by cameras. So he tells her that he'll know when Lyra and Will come back with the knife.
This is all really nice, Carlo. But what does this have to do with Lyra?
This motherfucker creeps into a... What a creepy dude. Anyway, continue on. I'm sorry.
He's really just like too thirsty. It's really not. It's bad. And you know,
he's
now
trying
that...
to show out. He's just flexing the whole time. He's like, look at this. Look at my house. Look at my Tesla. Look at my secret vault. You know what I mean? Like, are you impressed yet?
We'll talk about this later, but that's not what impresses her about this world. But
no.
He's just too thirsty, and now that I see him in a different light, you know, I'm not down with Carlo. He's not a good look, Carlo.
Yeah. Someone please call 911.
So while waiting for Lyra and Will to return, they have like the most awkward date ever. Like, yeah. They're kind of just sitting there. He's trying to make small talk. So to pass the time, Mrs. Coulter decides that she would like to meet Mary Malone to find out what the conversations Mary and Lyra have been having.
Because his like kind of come on was like, oh, in this world, you know, there's women scholars and you could study dark matter. And she's like, can you turn this shit off? You got playing in the background, please? Just for a second. You're talking real shit now. I want to hear this. All right.
So first, Boreal tells her that she needs to change into more modern clothing so that she will fit in.
And waits in the fucking room. This guy has to be asked to leave. What a creeper. Anyway,
this scene made me so uncomfortable. And let me just say, Colty, jeans are dope. Like, I don't know why you're holding the jeans like they offended you. We can't all wear high heels.
Casual Fridays is not her thing. She's not doing it. Like, when we go back into the office, no denim. No denim dress down. It's not happening.
What would she think of us now? Like, oh, God. I haven't worn jeans since March.
I don't even know what jeans look like. You know what I mean? Like, sweatpants all day, you know?
So she changes, and here comes the really shocking part of the episode. I actually gasped. She leaves the golden monkey locked in the bedroom at Boreal's house.
We talked about this so much when Dr. Lancelius is going before the magisterium and he's describing this and they focus in on, and we're going to talk more about it, and we focus in on Mrs. Coulter. And I was like, man, I wonder what's going to happen, because we were saying she's gotten far away from the golden monkey before, but she's never gone this far. It was wild to see her like close the door and just leave.
Yeah. I mean, this was crazy to me.
Yeah.
It was shocking. And Boreal is shocked by it. He's like, where's your demon?
And she essentially shushes him. I mean, we're going to talk more about this, but it's hard to just pass over that because it's so huge. Like, she essentially, like, says to him, like, I know you've encountered a woman that's in control before, and you must have, in all your travels, encountered witches. Like, stunning on him. What? Okay, put a pin in that. Let's come back to that line.
Yeah,
wow.
We will talk about it for sure, because this I was stunned.
Yeah.
So she heads over to the university and she has a very awkward and stilted conversation with Dr. Malone, who is very happy to see her, right? When she identifies herself as Lyra's mother, she, you know, Mary is excited. She's, frankly, she wants to know more about Mrs. Coulter's work, which, you know, we'll get more into that too later. Mm-hmm. And before she can really question her more, Mrs. Coulter just gets up and leaves. So back at Boreal's house, she tells him that she's really frustrated with living in their world. This is the thing that is fascinating to her about Will's world, that a woman can head a department, that a woman can be a recognized and respected scholar. And she specifically says that Mary Malone is free. You know, she says that she's impertinent, intelligent and free. And she talks a lot about how in her own world, she can't even publish her work under her name, that she was denied a doctorate by the magisterium. And she reads Boreal for filth. Like, she calls him out on basically being shallow and, you know, amassing trinkets instead of getting knowledge and discovery.
And she puts it together in a way that she understands that a lot of why he was doing this, even if he's not saying that, was to one day kind of, he thought he was going to be able to move in a way that would get her to come over here and impress her. And she's like, what, were you thinking you would add me to your collection? And she's not here for it. Like, she feels like he has squandered a huge opportunity by coming to this world where he knows so much. And all he's looked at is how to enrich himself and, you know, create things for himself that were basically, you know, small on the scale of what she would have done.
Mm-hmm. I mean, her final line to him before they're interrupted was so savage. Oh, if you actually got me, you wouldn't begin to know what to do with me.
Oh.
Oof. My feelings were hurt. Like,
listen. Listen, you're going to go to therapy on that one, Carlo. Like, you're leaving to talk to someone. Maybe Fra Pavel has a word for you on his alethiometer. Like, that is some savage shit. If somebody told me that I was interested in, I would just, like, you know what? Just dead emojis, dead skull emojis. That's it. I'm done. Forget it. Done.
Oh, boy. Yeah, it was, I actually rewound it because I was like, I just need to see this.
It's fucking savage.
And it's only the beginning of the savagery in this episode.
Oh, my God. Oh, she's so savage. I mean, it was great. It was great. But let's talk about Will and Lyra, right? So back in Chittagatse, Will and Lyra make their plan to steal the alethiometer back from Boreal. Will opens his first portal into Oxford, which Lyra has to remind him to close. He's like about to move on. She's like, hey, close the portal. Okay. And learns that the worlds match up. So what they're seeing is that, you know, they can find a location. And in that location, if they open the portal, it's kind of like, it's like directly the same as in the other world. So they're basically able to see the location of Boreal's house and figure out how they will proceed. So suddenly they hear screaming and come up on Angelica and Paolo, who have discovered Trulio, the boy who attacked Will and Lyra in the tower, wandering through the streets, soulless in the aftermath of the specters. Angelica turns on them immediately and tells them that they will pay. She said, look what you did. Look what you did to Trulio. This is a devastating part in the books. Like, honestly, she's not here for it. And it's sad.
Are we going to pour one out for Tulio?
Yeah.
Now that he's officially gone, poor kid was just trying to survive.
He was trying to survive. And you know what? I, you know, usually we don't do this, but in this case, especially someone who attacks our favorites, but let's pour out something good for him. Okay. Let's just do something nice, because these kids didn't ask to be in this situation. If not for Asriel's fuckery, right? Failure as a man, failure as a father, failure as a custodian of other worlds. They would be okay. Their parents would be alive. They'd be living their normal life, and you know, all would be well. So yeah, we'll pour one out for Tullio.
Yeah, poor Tullio.
So that night, Will and Lyra cut into Boreal's house, interrupting a tense conversation that we talked about earlier between Boreal and Colty. Will cuts a portal into the living room and almost grabs the alethiometer, but is interrupted by the golden monkey.
Who, even though he was left at home and locked in a bedroom, is still loyal to the end.
Ride or die. He's a ride or die type of demon. And you gotta respect it and appreciate it. But hearing Will scream, Lyra runs into the house and confronts her mother. She's kind of shocked to see her mother, who offers her the alethiometer and tries to reason with her. And Lyra's like, why should I trust you? I don't trust you. And you see a different side of Lyra. Just when it appears that Lyra might agree to go with her mother, Mrs. Coulter missteps and says Lyra is just like her.
And she Lyra really shows her how she is.
Yeah. Well, you know, truthfully, Mrs. Coulter was not wrong in this instance, even though Lyra didn't want to accept it. And here we go. A rematch. A rematch for all rematches. In this corner, weighed in from parts unknown at 135 pounds.
If that. More like 30 pounds.
Pan the Wolverine. The crowd goes wild. And in this corner, still a fucking golden monkey. The golden monkey gets that ass whooped. Wrecked.
I mean, okay. On the first watch, you know that I was just hyped. I texted you. It was like, this is the best thing I've seen ever, because Pan whoops that ass.
And doesn't let up. And you see Mrs. Coulter like shocked at Lyra's ruthlessness in this moment. Her and Pan are like, fuck you. No, this has never happened. You're not doing to us what you did in your apartment again. You're not going to trick me with your niceness. I'm going to wreck you right now.
Yeah. The rematch is something I have deeply wanted. And the petty part of me was just glad to see it happen.
Yeah.
Upon the rewatch, the scene was devastating.
Yeah.
The golden monkey is not fighting back. Pan is really mad. And it's just, given what all that the golden monkey has gone through, it's actually it's quite sad to watch it happen, because he's not fighting back because Mrs. Coulter doesn't want him to.
Yeah.
And Mrs. Coulter fully believes that she deserves this and is willing to accept her daughter's anger.
It was
a really hard scene. I mean, listen, these two actresses are killing it, but just if you really think about what happened in this confrontation, it's really devastating that this is a mother and daughter.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, and you see this coldness. You see, oddly enough, in her saying, oh, well, you know, you're just like me, and she's trying to warn her about falling for Will the way she fell for Asriel. And in that, you see this coldness in Lyra that is so similar to her mother, and it's kind of chilling, like, right? Because Lyra doesn't normally go there to that level, and she was there. Like, she, if not for Will, I think she would have kept going. You know what I mean? There was no stopping.
Yeah. I mean, Will kind of was like, we need to get up out of here.
Yeah, and so Will knocks out Boreal, right? He knocks
Boreal
out.
Had it coming for sure.
Yeah, he did. I like that Will put that forearm in his neck too. He was like, "Don't talk about my mama, man. What you talking about?" And he got him. And then, you know, the knife falls, and Boreal's going for it, and he takes one of his trinkets and he bangs him over the head. I love that he cut off one of the heads of the trinket too, the same one that Mrs. Coulter was trying to drop earlier to mess with them. And then they, you know, Lyra, Will, and Pan escape through another portal. At that moment, Will's like, we got to go. They head back to Chittagatze. They have the alethiometer and the subtle knife in hand. When they get back to Chittagatze, though, Will is like, I've never seen you like that, Lyra. And they debrief a little bit. And she tells Will that she hopes that rather than being like her parents, she could be more like Ma Costa or Lee Scoresby. And Will says, well, why would you want to be like anybody other than yourself? Like, they would all be lucky to be like you. Oh, and it's so such a good moment. God, yeah. Man, these guys.
I love that they're really bonding.
Yeah.
Nothing will have you bonding with a person like, you know, almost dying multiple times in a few days.
Multiple. Losing fingers. You know what I mean? Like, it's serious. But I just love their chemistry. I mean, they nailed it Amir and Daphne are killing this. Like, they're just really, they feel natural as Will and Lyra in a way that you wanted as a fan. And I love it. It's really great.
Yeah, they're great. And they also have great moments where they're, you know, whenever one of them is doubting themselves, the other one kind of steps up. Like earlier in the episode when Angelica confronted Will about Tullio, Lyra was like, it wasn't your fault. You know, like, it, none of us asked to be in this situation. And I love that they're there for each other, because, man, I don't know how these kids would do this without each other.
I don't either. I also like that there's nuances to their relationship, right? Like, there's this really cool moment when they're walking through Chittagatze and Lyra's trying to show out, and Will's like, what? You can't just go and do what you're thinking to get the alethiometer back. And Lyra's like trying to be cool, like, I wasn't thinking that. And Pan's like, yes, you were. She's like, shut up, Pan. And it makes Will laugh, because what's happening is that Will and Pan are also developing a relationship, which to me signifies that the depth of Will and Lyra's relationship, that it's not just the surface level, like, oh, I know you and your demon. It's like they're getting close. It's really cool. It's really cool.
Demons, I mean, we were going to talk about this later, but I feel like it makes sense to mention it now. Demons don't usually talk to other people.
Mm-hmm.
It's very rare. So they usually speak to that person's demon. So the fact that Will and Pan have really developed a relationship is very meaningful to the story. And I just love to see it. It's great.
Yep.
The I don't remember the name of the voice actor who plays Pan, but he's great.
Yep. 100%.
Yeah, their exchanges seem really authentic, so I like it. So let's check in with the Magisterium for a minute.
Okay.
So things aren't going so well there.
Fra Pavel is my guy. He looks a little bit like, you know, Homer Simpson creeping into the bushes in some of these scenes. But we'll get there, right?
So the leadership is sitting around having a casual conversation, you know, as one does when you're oppressing other people.
Yeah.
So they talk about arresting dissidents, you know, the witches, finding Mrs. Coulter, and they're informed that 24 of their fighters were killed by the witches, who then, after wrecking them, went through the portal.
Mm-hmm.
This throws the entire meeting into chaos, because Cardinal MacPhail, he's been struggling with Father Graves. I feel you, Cardinal MacPhail. Sometimes when you're leading a team, there's someone on the team who's the, well, what about this? What about that? That's Father Graves.
Yeah. And Father Graves doesn't even know the lingo of this world. He's out here talking about blasphemy. It's heresy, sir. It's heresy. All right? Doesn't even know.
He didn't read the agenda.
At all.
We're not talking about blasphemy. We're talking about heresy.
Exactly.
So Father MacPhail decides, you know, as one casually does, to have Father Graves imprisoned for doubt and lack of devotion.
These brothers were killed as a symbol of our lack of faith. And there is disturbance within our midst. The doubt and lack and devotion of Father Graves. I am, no, I'm always, carry him out, imprison him. It's great.
It was this. I was like, wait, what? I found myself rewinding because I was like, what just happened? But
the best part of this whole thing, like, yes, both of those dudes' exchange is cool from a dramatic standpoint. The best thing is the fucking face on Fra Pavel as it's all going down. This fucking guy is so shook. He's like, what the fuck? Oh my God. Yo, he is.
He's lucky that he knows how to read the alethiometer because he could have gone too.
For sure. He would have been in trouble. He would have been in trouble if not for the fact that he's needed right now. And then you could see he's a little bit worried that he's actually being called upon to find and track down Mrs. Coulter. He's like, go to your alethiometer. Tell me where she is. Who? Like, my dude, you know who he's talking about. Why are you trying to play dumb? Playing dumb. You know who he's talking about. Oh, it's so good.
So, yeah. So he's asked to find Mrs. Coulter using the alethiometer. So, you know, in about 2 months, he'll figure out where she's at.
He's slow. All right. He's very efficient, but he's very slow. I mean, he's very effective, but it's very inefficient, his methods. All right. Like, it's just... I'm sorry. It's just, they need to call Lyra is what they need, but they can't get her.
She would gladly tell them where her mother is.
Yeah, exactly. Come pick her up. Come get her.
So let's check in now with Mary Malone. Mm. She had a pretty big episode, even though she's really only in a couple of scenes.
Huge episode.
So Mary Malone does exactly what any of us would have done after a strange person shows up in our office. Mm-hmm. She takes to Google. She's like, who is this woman? What is experimental theology? So she types in Marissa Coulter, experimental theologian, into Google. And it looks like the results are pretty pathetic. Because experimental theologian is not a word.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is not a discipline in our world. And obviously, Marissa Coulter doesn't exist in our world.
Well, all our educator friends would be like, she needed to check Google Scholar, okay? She didn't need to check, like, regular Google. That's not the right search, all right? But it's okay. She'll learn.
So she, while she's doing this, she hears from the voice in the cave again. Mm. And the voice in the cave basically tells her what her next steps are. It tells her, you must play the serpent. You've been prepared for this as long as you have lived. And then it tells her she needs to go to the portal and she'll be protected. Doesn't say from what. And save the girl and the boy. And I thought it was interesting that it said save the girl and then kind of tagged on and the boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And then the voice lets her know, we will not speak in this world again.
So you're going to speak in another world? Like, yeah. Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay.
So... Mary doesn't freak out like I would have. She goes home. She consults her Bible.
To which her friend clowns her about, are you going back into the convent? What's happening?
It's yeah. Like, and she says she's going to go away for a little bit. And I think this is her sister.
Yeah, it is her sister.
And her sister says, you know, I have a friend who has a place in Devon. And she's like, I'm going to go a little further than Devon.
Just a tiny bit further.
So mm-hmm. that night, she heads to the portal that Boreal and Mrs. Coulter used, and up to this point, Lyra and Will have been using, and she heads into Chittagatze, and that's where the episode ends, with her in Chittagatze, you know, where Will and Lyra are, so we'll
I'm
have
worried
to see
for
where
her.
It goes
Why
from there.
She's in Chittagatze as an adult. She's got to get out of there. Like, you know what I mean?
Well,
like,
the voice did tell her she'd be protected. So I'm interested in seeing what kind of protection it offers her.
Yeah.
And what that means. Does it mean that she should find Will and Will will protect her? Or, like, what does it mean, you know?
Can we just say, Boreal's got to get better minions, man. This motherfucker, like, gave it up. Mrs. Coulter?
So stupid.
What?
She's like, yes.
Yes, exactly.
And I was actually... I've been waiting for this scene. And in the book, she has to go through so much more to get through the portal.
So much more. So
this guy
much.
Just gave it up.
Yeah.
He was like, you're Mrs. Coulter. He just waved her through like she was on the VIP list.
Yeah. It's wild. They simplified it. I think it's good because, you know, it would have added a lot more time to the script. But yeah, it's so much more complicated for her to get through that portal then. But it smart move by Boreal to put somebody there to try to block off the portal so that people couldn't get in and out. I was pretty impressed with that decision. But
I just wonder when he blocked it off, because obviously Will and Lyra don't need it anymore. So who else would need it? And also, the guard tells her it's private property. So this Boreal, I mean, it seems like Lathrum Industries owns that piece of land. I thought it was a public park previously.
Yeah.
It's so,
interesting.
Interesting. Yeah.
Interesting for sure.
So what did you think of this episode?
I really liked it. I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to say that I think that this is beats last week's episode, which I thought was the best of the season. And I think this one is now the best of the season, which is good. It's trending in the right direction. This one to me was the best of the season. And I thought that there were some really cool moments. You know, obviously, you know, one of the biggest is the conversations that were had between Boreal and Colty, and also the conversation between Mrs. Coulter and Mary Malone. Like, I thought that those were very powerful. And, you know, Ruth Wilson just keeps bringing it with her portrayal of Mrs. Coulter. And, I mean, in that conversation where she's reflecting and she's talking to Boreal, and the first thing she says is she was impertinent, you almost think of it as, like, her being negative towards her. But then as she said, intelligent and free, you realize that she was happy about her ability to be impertinent, her ability to just be who she is, unencumbered. And it's similar to how, when we talked about offline, how Ruby is in Lovecraft Country, talking about being interrupted and how she wanted to be uninterrupted and she wanted these mm-hmm. moments. And I thought it was just powerful to see the effect that all of this manipulation and all the things that we don't like about Mrs. Coulter, how the world itself almost forced her into a corner to be that way. She asked a very poignant question. How much do you know about how things went with me and Asriel? And he starts going on and on and on about, well, you were manipulated and this and that, but why are we talking about Asriel? And she says, we're not talking about Asriel. We're talking about me.
Yeah, and that was moving when this was a really powerful conversation. I mean, yeah. I think your comparison to Ruby from Lovecraft Country is a really good one. But I also was reminded, and I'm going to get some backlash for this, but I was reminded of Zuko from Atla.
Hmm.
When we meet him, the world, his situation has made him this way. And you've been saying this about Mrs. Coulter all along.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt deep empathy for her. The frustration she must feel is incredible.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think that this is a good comparison as well. That the world has kind of, like, there's a lot of that in Zuko. Like, Zuko is trying to, he's, you know, he's looking for external validation, you know, like, and he's looking to bring honor to his family and to himself, and he thinks it's outside of himself. And, you know, thank goodness he has Iroh, but Mrs. Coulter didn't have Iroh, and the person who she thought she could trust, Asriel, was not in it to help her. She says, I finished, like, you know, my exams with higher scores than any other person. I should have been a doctor, but instead I could only publish my papers if it was published by a man. And she is, like, seeing, like, that you don't have any, she's saying to him, you have no idea what I would be in this world. And it's painful. You could see the pain. And it's very similar to, like, where I think Zuko would have been, and really where Azula is. Azula is a lot of Mrs. Coulter, if we're talking mm-hmm. about Atla comparisons, because Azula never sees another option for herself. And she doesn't see a way out of any other way other than, you know, fulfilling what she thinks will get the acceptance of her father and the acceptance of the world. And eventually it drives her crazy, you know?
Yeah, and I think that with Azula is another good comparison, because she enjoys the fear that she creates in other people, mm-hmm. manipulating other people. That cruelty that we see in Azula, we also see it flare up in Mrs. Coulter from time to time.
Yep, 100%.
I found this episode to be really beautiful in these moments. And then it was also just action-packed. I mean, so much happened here, right? We have a confrontation that we've been waiting for since Bolvanger between Mrs. Coulter and Lyra. Mm-hmm. A rematch of Pan and the Golden Monkey. Will is using his abilities as the bearer of the knife. And I think we've all decided that we're kind of out on Boreal. Like, even Mrs. Coulter is really out on him. I mean, it does seem like Mrs. Coulter and Boreal, once they got their asses handed to them by two children, regrouped and are going to align again. But, you know, it's pretty well known that Boreal, like Azrael, is trash.
Yeah, and I agree. And she's also using, goes reverts right back to their dynamic of, you know, let me poke at you and your ego. Are you going to let mm-hmm. an adolescent, you know, best you? Okay, if that's the man you want to be. And she's playing and, you know, she's poking at that thing that she knows is inside of him to try to impress her. And she also has the brilliance to pull off something like the conversation that they have. And he's saying, you can't go into this world if you're an adult. And she basically says, see, that's where you're wrong, Carlo. Once you understand something, you have the ability to master it. And her confidence as a person with science and with dark matter or dust and all of these things, she has confidence that she can figure out a way to make that work in their favor. And that's it. I mean, just to make that be your comeback shows you how impressive she is as a scholar in that world.
And she also, when she said that, that's exactly how she treats people, mm-hmm. right? That line had double meaning. She was also mastering him in a way.
Yep.
Because once she understood Boreal, she understood how to manipulate him. Same thing with Father excuse me. I don't want to.
How could you?
I don't want to cause some.
How could you?
Cardinal McPhail. Yeah.
Do you want to get put in the dungeon with Graves? What's going on? Come on.
But she never mastered Lyra. She never understood her.
Yeah.
So that's why she's not able to manipulate Lyra, because she doesn't fully understand her. She only understands the part of Lyra that yearns to be loved. She doesn't understand the rest of Lyra, what really drives Lyra, which is like a sense of justice, curiosity, and she just doesn't get that. So she can't master her because she doesn't understand her fully.
Yeah.
I thought that every scene that Ruth Wilson was in was incredible, because she's telling us so much about Mrs. Coulter. Even when she looks in the mirror, her own disdain for herself is clear.
Yeah.
And her own regret for the life that she could have had. If you just took a picture of Mrs. Coulter in her world and Mary Malone in her world, and you put them side by side, most people would think Mrs. Coulter had the better life, lived a life of power and privilege. And Mary Malone is this, like, you know, academic who's kind of scruffy, doesn't even have clean coffee cups mm-hmm. in her office, mm-hmm. which I deeply related to. But when Mrs. Coulter saw Mary Malone, she saw a person who was free to investigate the things that she wanted to investigate, and who didn't have to put on, you know, a costume, and didn't have to manipulate people, could just be who she was and could live by her wits. And I related to Mrs. Coulter in this moment, you know, aside from the torture. Mm-hmm. And the kidnapping kids, like, I get her.
But so, you know what? Speaking of Lovecraft Country, it's the same kind of way that you can relate to Christina, mm-hmm. even though you know that her intentions are not good, right? Like, you know that they're not good, that what she's looking for is to basically kill Atticus, sacrifice him. But you still can relate to the nuance of how she feels oppressed by this order that is, like, not letting women in, how she's had to take on the clothing of a man to even make some of the progress that she's had. And she also has some of these same struggles of Mrs. Coulter. So there's this running theme in the stories that we've covered where this is happening because it happens in society. And I think like it's important to acknowledge when the writers and the storylines and the actors and the characters that we're looking at are addressing something that's very, very present in our world and still needs to be reckoned with, you know?
Mm-hmm. I mean, at the end of the day, the villain of this episode was really like the patriarchy,
100%.
The magisterium's misogyny. Yep. So
100%. I mean, how many times can Boreal say a sexist thing in an episode? Let's have a drinking game in which this happens. All right, let's just
we
do
will
it.
Be very drunk very fast because he's really amped up his sexism in the last couple episodes.
Yeah, I know. This is what got him on the outs. He had hit that off ramp. You're gone, buddy. You're out of here.
It's done.
But talking about freedoms, let's talk about some of Mrs. Coulter's freedoms that we experienced in this episode that were mind-boggling, like leaving behind the golden monkey, right? Like, and have you never encountered witches in your travels? I know we spoke about it, but man, this is going to open so much speculation about where the show is going with Mrs. Coulter's character and this insinuation that because she's able to like leave her demon, that she has some relationship to the, at least the ceremony that the witches perform.
Mm-hmm. I'm a little bit, I'm finding it hard to find the words because a lot of people on Twitter, when this aired, were basically like, this confirms it. Yeah. She's a witch. I don't think that that's what's happening, but I do think it's being heavily hinted at. And if that's where the story goes, that Mrs. Coulter is the child of a witch, maybe that she never completed the ceremony, I would fully embrace that. I think they're noting that pretty heavily. It's no longer subtext, it's text. And so this was crazy. I was not expecting this at all. What? Like, she legit left the golden monkey at Boreal's house.
Yes. Yeah. It's...
And you know who else wasn't expecting it?
What?
The golden monkey. He was like, wait, I'm not going with you?
Yeah. I mean, it would have been wild to show up at Oxford with a monkey, though. So she, I mean, probably the right call if you can pull it off without being, like, totally wrecked as a person. But, yeah, I think, like, you know, she made the right call in this setting. But yeah, it's interesting where the show's going because, you know, I don't know that this is really, I don't recall this in the book. Like I'm trying to search my memory. I don't recall a meeting with Mrs. Coulter and Mary Malone in the book. So do you recall that?
No,
I don't either. So I think like this shows you that they're doing some things a little differently and introducing some things a little differently than what's written by Pullman. And that's fine. I mean, like, if this is the story that they want to enhance upon and tell, I'm okay with that nuance. I wonder what they're going to do with it because there has to be something they're planning to keep introducing this concept, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm of two minds about it. I think they've made some good changes here. I certainly think that they've expanded on both Mary Malone's character in a way I deeply appreciate. And also, obviously, from the beginning, Mrs. Coulter and Boreal are a little bit more full than I think, especially Boreal is in The Subtle Knife.
Yeah.
He's not. I mean, it's the first time we're really meeting him, and he's not like a really full character whose motivations you really understand. But I'm also a little nervous because I do think in other ways the show doesn't focus on some of the things that are really important. So they've built out some of these characters that aren't as robust in the book in really great ways. But then in other ways, they have shorthanded things that are really important.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, Pan comforting Will. That was a big moment.
Yeah, big moment.
And it was not, it didn't feel like it had the weight that it should have. So I think there's some, you know, I'm nervous, but I'm loving this, the second half of this season. I'm loving it. I liked last week's episode, even though I had problems with it. I really, this one was also, I think, the best one so far. So I'm excited about where things can go from here, because things get kind of crazy after this scene in the book.
Yeah. And I think, like, speaking of shorthand, you know, they've already gotten, you know, Grumman and Lee together, right? So they've accomplished something that took the book a while to do. But I'm really interested in where this is going from the book standpoint on the show. I'm really interested in where this is going in Chittagatse, because there's a lot to cover between that and where we'll end up by the end of the season, unless they don't finish a lot of the content in The Subtle Knife, which I don't anticipate they won't. I think, like, actually, I think we're going to get a more, you know, summarized version of what we saw in the books that lands us where we land at the end of The Subtle Knife in these next couple of episodes. And so they're going to have to pack a lot into these last few episodes. And I share your concern in that regard, that they may not have enough runway to get to everything the way with as much nuance as we would like, you know?
Yeah. And just on a meta note, I think that we've both felt at times that the show is moving too quickly, and then suddenly it's moving too slowly. And that's where I am right now. Like, I love this episode, but this feels like there's only two episodes left. That can't be possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there's only two episodes in this season. You know, we hope there'll be another season.
Yeah.
100%. But it feels... And I know that they were interrupted because of the pandemic, so I don't want to give them a hard time, but it seems like even a lot of stuff is left to happen with three episodes left, and they really only have the two. So we'll see. I'm okay if they don't finish the content from the book, just because, listen, there was a pandemic this year, so lots of things got interrupted. That said, this season felt a little uneven in terms of, like, how much time is spent on each thing. So we'll have to see.
Now, there's a pivotal couple of moments that have yet to been to be covered in The Subtle Knife book that I won't say, because I'm going to stick a pin in it till, you know, the next few episodes. But they're pivotal. Like, you can't speed through them. They changed the whole thing. Like, you know, so hopefully those moments get enough attention, and we'll leave it there. I can't say more without spoiling, so I won't. And because we're pretty committed to making sure that we're covering the episode so that you guys don't get, you know, you can listen to this right after you listen to the episode and not worry about the next episode. And we haven't seen the next episode. So let's hope that they cover those things. Let's just hope that they cover them well. But, you know, because if they don't, you may have to check on me like we need to check on Carlton McPhail. Is that guy okay?
Listen, what is going on with him?
I don't know.
He went from being... the very mention of Mrs. Coulter, like, set him off.
Yeah.
It was... Is he all right?
I don't know. I really have no answer. I know Fra Pavel is wondering the same thing. When he walked up out of there, he was trying to creep up out hella quick. Like, he was like, I gotta go. What'd you say? Okay.
He's really not doing okay. No. I can't say that I care.
No, I don't. I don't.
But the burden of being in charge seems like it's a little bit much for Cardinal McPhail. Yeah.
The burden of being in charge is a lot for him. And you know what? There are characters throughout all of these things that have one thread of, like, zero fucks given for me, right? Like, so with this, it's Cardinal McPhail and his Dark Materials. With The Witcher, it's Stregobor, right? Right? Like, zero fucks. I don't like those guys, zero fucks about them. And then we get to Atla, and it's Zhao, right? Like, all three of those motherfuckers could croak, and not a drop of anything would be poured out. Zhao already knows this, because we didn't spill anything for him. He was donezo. You know what I mean? And Stregobor has yet to meet his maker. Hopefully that happens.
I mean, I will be deeply excited when Stregobor meets his maker, yeah. But that's just me.
I mean, it's great. But
I mean, I want to note that remember when then Cardinal MacPhail was like the voice of reason to Mrs. Coulter?
Yeah.
He got a little bit of power and now he's a dictator. He turned into a dictator overnight. Like, the man is becoming unhinged.
Yeah. You know, it's hard. It's hard going from being a father to a cardinal. You know what I mean? Like, it's just one of those things.
Apparently.
Yeah, he's having a rough time. But, you know, there's some things that we talked about. We want to go a little bit deeper and some characters and some things that kind of came up in this episode that I think a deeper look through the Amber Spyglass would be warranted. So let's take a look through the Amber Spyglass and talk about Mrs. Coulter and the Serpent. So, we learned a bit about Mrs. Coulter this episode, but it's time to gather the details that we have on her history from the show and the books, okay? From the novels, we know that Marissa Coulter was born Marissa Delamere to a woman named Madame Delamere and an unknown man. Marissa studied at St. Sophia College in Oxford. Here, the show tells us that she was an honorary scholar and was refused a doctorate because she was a woman. She married a politician, Edward Coulter. But their marriage was not a success. It was a little rocky.
I mean, she was cheating. Yeah. So, I mean, what marriage would be a success?
No, it wasn't good. It was, you know. So, since she was a woman, and as the show tells us, was unable to pursue a traditional scholarship, she decided to focus her research on dust, something that the church was interested in and was a rare field of study. At some point, Marissa met Asriel, you know.
They got entangled.
They got entangled.
It was an entanglement.
It was an entanglement, right? An entanglement? An entanglement. An entanglement? Sorry, just can't do it without seeing the meme. The whole fucking video plays out of your head every time. And they fell in love pretty quickly, those two. Marissa gave birth to their child, Lyra. But she could not keep her since she did not look like Edward Coulter at all. Like, you know, they didn't even have, like, DNA testing over there. But, you know, just the face, just the mug. Lyra does kind of have, like, a very Asriel mug, right? Like, Coulter-shaped head, Asriel mug.
It was the arrogance.
It was the arrogance.
He was like, this baby's too arrogant. Yeah. Can't be mine.
So, she gave the child to Asriel, who hired Ma Costa to help him hide Lyra, actually, and also as her wet nurse. And that was short-lived. Edward Coulter found out about the affair and the child and went to Asriel's estate to murder him. He's going to murk Asriel, which would have saved us a lot of fucking trouble right now. Honestly, you could have been a better shot, Edward. Much like Edmure Tully, right? Couldn't hit a fucking rock if he tried, shooting arrows into boats and missing every time. It was really bad. Oversold, underdelivered. So Asriel killed Edward Coulter instead, leaving Marissa a widow, and as a result of this action, he lost his rank and his lands. Marissa's shame didn't stop her from working with the magisterium and gaining prominence, right? Getting back in their good graces. She continued to investigate dust and eventually found the General Oblation Board, the Goblus, which was responsible for the kidnapping of children all over England and taking them to Bolvanger. So, you know, this is a complex history for Mrs. Coulter, and one that will continue to unfold on episodes in the future.
Mm-hmm. So we should also talk about the serpent in the room.
Yeah.
And not Tiny Nagini, but... the metaphorical serpent. So the references in this episode to the serpent took Mary Malone straight to her Bible. And we talked last week and the week before, I think, about how she's uniquely qualified to understand the intersection of science and religion because she used to be a nun. Mm. And so she heard that serpent reference and went straight to the Bible. For those who aren't aware of the story of the original sin, let's consider what we know about the serpent. In the Bible, the serpent is described as being cunning and attempting to trick Adam and Eve to disobey their creator, God. Unlike the other creatures in the Garden of Eden, the serpent could speak and could reason with them. Adam had been warned by God not to eat the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, or the forbidden fruit. But the serpent told Eve that she could eat the fruits of the tree and nothing would really happen to her, but her eyes would open, so nothing bad would come of it. Eve eventually does eat from the tree, and then she gives some of the fruit to Adam, who also imbibes. And when God found out, he cast him out of the garden. This is known to Christians as the fall of man. In the Judeo-Christian faiths, the serpent represents temptation. But we know Mary Malone has good intentions here. So it's interesting to think of her as the serpent and what that means for the story going forward.
I think it means fascinating things to think about a story where the angel that is speaking to her in the cave says that they've always been with humanity and they've always been there for vengeance, and that they're now encouraging her to be the serpent, to speak into Lyra's ear and to encourage Will. Wow. Okay, that's all. Yeah, I'm gonna leave it there.
Yeah, I think the show sometimes shies away from the religious aspects, but I don't think this is an area where they have. This question of original sin and dust and all of that, they always, towards the end of the season, have been, both seasons, they have made that connection very directly. Mm-hmm. So I thought this was very telling that they used basically the exact phrasing from the book, which was great.
Yeah, 100%. So let's talk about the theme. The impact of personal histories is what we saw as the theme in this episode. And, the voice in the cave tells Mary, "You have been prepared for this as long as you have lived." We discussed in previous episodes how the experiences of Mary Malone, Mrs. Coulter, and Lee brought them to this moment. In this episode, we see the impact of past experiences on Lyra as well. For the third time, we see Lyra reunited with her mother, who she both loves and fears. For a moment, it appears that Lyra wants to believe her mother's pleas to come with her and abandon Will, but instead, she attacks her mother's demon, using tactics Mrs. Coulter used on Lyra in season 1. Despite the desire to know her mother and to be loved by her, Lyra's past trauma, the experiences at Bullvanger, and losing Roger have taught her not to trust Mrs. Coulter and chooses another path instead.
We also gain insight into how Mrs. Coulter's history has impacted her choices. She shared the frustration and pain of having to prove herself over and over again because the misogyny in her world and the oppression of the Magisterium. When faced with the success of another woman scholar, Mary Malone, Coulter sees the life she could have had. If only she'd been allowed to pursue it. Instead, she has to work at the margins and in the shadows to pursue her goals. She has to bow to men like Father McPhail, who I've now said father twice. Sorry, Father. I mean, Cardinal. and Cardinal Sturrock. This has made her a cold and ruthless person. And now her child has rejected her again. So she's seeking other means to achieve her goals. And from what we know of Mrs. Coulter, these means are likely going to be ruthless as well.
Could it be that she's tired of reading stories about better men? Sorry, they're not really better than her. Jeez, that guy was trash too.
Yeah, I'm really... I was a little shook when she said, "When you have to understand a thing too. When you understand a thing, you can master it." Well, she's got a plan, and it's going to be a scary one.
Oh yeah, she definitely has a plan. Book readers know what it is. She's definitely got a plan, and I hope that like I said, a lot to get to, and I'm really excited for them to do it. Okay, and just in reference to my last line, can we just also, in the Zhao line lineage of trashness, we're also going to add Randall Tarley. Okay, just so you know, we'll add him in there too. He got what he deserved. Listen, I'm House Targ. He got what he deserves.
Wow. This is a hot, scorching take.
I'm sorry. Like, listen, here's one thing. I know that this is a detour. And this is not even the show we're covering. And we've never covered Thrones yet on this show. But I'm a huge fan, as we all are. I know that it didn't end like how we wanted to. But one of the problems with how it ended was everybody kept trying to talk Danny down. I hope nobody tries to talk Will and Lyra down, okay? Sometimes you just have to do what you have to do. If that when Jon Snow killed a fucking boy younger than Bran, shout out to Jay and Mal of Binge Mode. Nobody said shit. Scorch that motherfucker. Randall Tarly's trash. And Azriel and all those people need to get theirs too. We'll see what happens. Okay. That's all I have to say.
Listeners, okay? At Paul. Don't at me.
Yes. I have takes for days about Randall Tarly, so please, please at me about that.
Listen, you get that out of your system? Feeling
I
good?
Did. I've been holding that one for a while, actually. You know what? Because I was so sick. Like, everybody act like she was the worst shit ever. She gave them an option to go to the wall. That motherfucker said he was going to die. Well, your xenophobic ass needs to get burnt. I'm sorry. Like, this is how it goes.
I can't believe this. This is great.
Huge ass xenophobe, right? Like, listen, I'm not crying for him. Is there anybody else crying for him?
You're not crying for Sam, though? That was his pops.
He was mean to Sam. Sam is better for it. Sam went on to become a fucking maester. He's fine. He even got to have a wife and a kid. He broke the fucking order. He changed the whole order of the maesters. Like, he's fine. He's a better man. He became a better man. Like, he doesn't have to read stories. He wrote stories about men not as good as him. Okay? Like, that's it. He's fine. Sam is fine. And in that story, one of the men not as good as him is his dad, who got fried up, and he deserved it.
This is the content that people are here for.
Okay. I'm sorry.
I don't disagree with you entirely. I'm just not endorsing your entire rant.
In our real world, I am totally against the death penalty. But in the world of Game of Thrones, listen. He killed a boy, okay? Like, and she fried an old-ass fucker that was xenophobic. That's it. And yes, yes, when the House of the Dragon drops, you will come to Kinfolklore. We will be covering. This is coming.
For
anyway.
The scorching hot takes.
You can't have Pete too. Listen, I'm tired out here in these streets. We are House Targ, both of us, okay? And then I'm tired of these streets. Everybody with their takes about Danny this, Danny that. Listen, Danny was fine. She was just fine until the end.
Okay. All right. Well, now that you got that out of your system, which this podcast is a year old, and I'm shocked it took us that long for you.
It did. It took us a while. I held it for so long. It was so long. I held it. Anyway, the point is that, you know, Will and Lyra are going to have to make some tough decisions that I hope that people don't judge them for. And I hope that they get, you know, it's going to be tough fighting against different things and factions. It's going to be interesting.
I mean, we talked about this a couple weeks ago, but intentions are important, but sometimes they don't matter. You can still hurt people. I mean, we've seen this with Tullio. He's already a victim casualty of what they had to do. So I don't feel super, super bad because they were in a position where it was him or them, right? Yeah. And he probably would have killed Giacomo. So I think, you know, Will didn't have much decision, obviously, there. And it's not their fault that the Spectres got him, but it is a consequence of what they're doing and the road that they're on, that some people are going to get hurt in the process. Roger's been hurt. Tullio. So, you know, it is what it is.
Yep. No, it is going to be, you know, collateral damage. You know, it's something that we said we spoke about in the last episode, and a lot of people, there's been a lot of collateral damage based on this mission that all these, you know, quote unquote heroes are on. So, you know, we have to like see how this all plays out for mm-hmm. sure, for sure. Mm-hmm. But that will do it for us. One more week down. And we're getting closer and closer to the season finale. My goodness, I can't believe how fast this season is going. But we hope that you are enjoying. Reach out to us on all our socials. Go ahead and hit us up at kinfolklore@gmail.com. All of the you can hit us on Twitter, kinfolklorepod. You can hit us on Instagram, kinfolklorepod as well. And definitely on Facebook. You know, we do a lot. We see you guys' messages on Facebook. Continue to, it's fun to interact with you there. And it's a great space to talk about the show.
Mm-hmm. Bye, everyone. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.